Kay Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. In a major policy shift, President Biden will let Ukraine use U.S.-supplied long-range missiles to strike deep inside Russia. CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland said this could make a big difference in the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
As a consequence, Ukrainians will now be able to strike targets at greater range on Russian territory than they have in the past. The primary weapon of choice will be the American ATACMS missile, which has a range of roughly 190 miles. And consequently, it will allow Kyiv to strike reserve troop concentrations, missile launch sites, and airfields on Russian soil.
Mr. Biden today became the first sitting American president to visit the Amazon rainforest in Brazil. He went there to highlight the dangers of climate change and the necessity to turn away from fossil fuels. In the process, he made a not-so-veiled reference to climate change deniers.
Some may seek to deny or delay the clean energy revolution that's underway in America. But nobody can reverse it. Nobody.
Should a House Ethics Committee report on sex trafficking allegations against now former Congressman Matt Gaetz be released? Some senators who may decide if Gaetz should be Attorney General say yes. House Speaker Mike Johnson says no.
Matt Gaetz resigned from Congress. He is no longer a member. There's a very important protocol and tradition and rule that we maintain that the House Ethics Committee's jurisdiction does not extend to non-members of Congress. I think that would be a Pandora's box.
Johnson was on CNN. Oklahoma Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullen tells NBC he wants to see the report.
Absolutely. And I believe the Senate should have access to that. Now, should it be released to the public or not? That's, I guess, that will be part of the negotiations, but that should be definitely part of our decision making.
Opposition continues to grow to the prospect of vaccine skeptic Robert F. Kennedy Jr. becoming Secretary of Health and Human Services. On ABC, the former acting director of the CDC, Dr. Richard Besser.
We have a social contract in our country. There are things we do for our own health, but there are things we do that are good for ourselves, our families, and our communities. And vaccination falls into that category. And having someone who denies that in that role is extremely dangerous.
Contrary to popular belief, baby carrots are simply large carrots that have been cut down into smaller pieces.
The CDC is warning about a multi-state E. coli outbreak linked to bagged organic whole and baby carrots sold by Grimway Farms. 15 people have been hospitalized, one person has died, 39 people have been infected across 18 states. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. It's now in the hands of the state Supreme Court. Wisconsin's highest judiciary will decide the fate of the state's 1849 abortion law. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
A circuit court determined last year that an 1849 law doesn't apply to medically consented abortions in Wisconsin. The high court heard arguments Monday about whether a 1985 state law overrides the older one, allowing abortions before the point at which a fetus could survive outside the womb. Jenny Higgins, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, says returning to the status quo would mean a dire landscape for abortion access.
Even though abortion is technically available at clinics in Wisconsin right now, it's heavily restricted because of insurance and Medicaid prohibitions. People have to pay out of pocket for a service that should be covered by insurance.
Abortion access disproportionately affects those who are already the most marginalized, Higgins says. She notes while people from all walks of life may find themselves needing abortion care, factors like poverty and racism make it much harder for some to achieve reproductive autonomy compared to those with more economic and social resources.
Those effects make it much harder for folks to be able to access contraceptive care, be in relationships that are stable and healthy and communicative, be able to see past the end of the day, right, into one's future, if you are, again, sort of focused mostly on your own economic scarcity or figuring out how to feed your kids or figuring out how not to get evicted.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, clearing out, a low around 39. Rain likely for Monday with a high near 56. Monday night, rain, low 50s, southeast winds 15 to 25, gusting over 30 at times. Rain likely for Tuesday, breezy with a high around 61.
It's 51 at our studios.
Maggie Dawn.
Next, I'll be joined by Tom Moore from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We'll discuss Trump's personnel selection process and recess appointments. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome into Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. Mino and the Mayor is up first, and this week Jim and John welcomed on David Pietla to talk about his new recording studio in Appleton, Source Track Studio. The trio dive into his passion of helping musicians and singers create their best music right here in the Fox Valley.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Special thanks to Carrie Josephson. All the respect in the world for her battling Alzheimer's disease and what she's doing, leading the fight around here. Just fantastic.
Reaching out to the caregivers, which is a huge, huge part of that disease. So.
And a salute to all of them.
Yeah. And, you know, really got to, she's got the resources, you know, everything from curative to, you know, forget me not. There's just a lot of things out there that people should be aware of. So you can either learn about it this Friday, right, at the volleyball.
Yep, Friday night.
Or just give her a call at that 800.
Absolutely, 24/7 it's manned. That's outstanding. All right, I got we got a special guest coming on right now. So David Pietla, Source Track Studios. Tell us what you do, David.
I produce music for bands. I'm basically just a record producer who brings the best out of bands and like to make music.
That is. It's a fun gig, I would imagine, but yes. We bring in some local artists. Jim has some students who are trying to be promoters. Tough gig.
It can be. I've gotten to a point where I've got this really good workflow where I just know where everything goes and know how to do it.
Okay.
And then we work fast and the end product is label ready.
Okay. But that's step one. I mean, getting it to market, getting it. You know, that's a struggle, is it not? I mean, that's what
I kind
of teach.
Yeah, people don't listen.
Yeah, I teach more. The product is, you know, sure. I'm assuming everybody's got a good product, right? Before I don't really work on the product. But we've had some great musicians in here, and it's like, boy, I do think they deserve to be more popular than they are.
Yeah, well, the tough thing was, so I ran the studio in my house for 7 years. I started it in 2017, and I was making records in these tiny bedrooms. Luckily, my wife let me use the entire upstairs for the studio. And getting it to the point where I could get to a commercial location, that was the tough part. You got to save up money. You got to build up skills. You got to build the clientele and build people's trust.
And that's what I mean when I said tough cool. gig.
Like, yeah.
To get to where you are now.
Essentially, just building a community around this studio. I never say, I'm going to feel dirty saying it now. I never say my studio because it's not really mine. It's its own thing. And it's kind of built a community around it and both with music, really good coffee. I should have brought you guys some coffee.
Oh, you got beautiful coffee mugs. Yeah. I love these cups.
So can you, have you made somebody? Like, you know, like you read all these, look at all this Motown stuff and this guy in the studio.
Well,
like,
you've got
you
know, a student who's trying to.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that. See there with the cigar, you know, you got it. You know. How's the talent in Northeast Wisconsin? Is that where your clientele come from?
Yeah, mostly Wisconsin, but I've had people from other countries reach out and have me mix their stuff, like Belgium and whatnot. But we've got an incredible music scene in the Appleton area. I get a lot of bands coming from near like the Illinois border as well. People drive from across the state to work with me now, and it's pretty amazing. I think they just come for the good coffee, but I mean if we make good music at the same time.
When you take somebody, and again, we've had some really young artists here, but they're close. Like Young Sage, was that the name of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And I didn't quite understand what he was saying, but was it Spotify where if he gets a certain number of hits or whatever, he could get like a $2 million contract? What was that?
Certain number of streams on Spotify.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's at like 250,000, needs to get closer to a million, but he's out promoting himself, and Sony or someone said to him, look, if you hit a million, you know, come talk to us and we'll give you a contract.
Wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that, he's a pretty talented guy. I mean, music isn't music I listen to every day, but what he does really, really well.
Yeah, I think there's a market for everybody. It's just finding your niche and sticking with, not necessarily sticking with what you know, but being authentic. That's the biggest thing in the music scene these days, because we've got AI creating music.
Right.
We've got robots making music, and that's not really authentic. So if you can make music that's real and personal and that people can connect with, I think you're on the right track.
So when someone comes in and they've written something, it's original, and they come to see you, do you add like the sax, what do you add to their original music to make it better, I guess?
Most of my clientele is full bands.
So they've already have that. Wow.
Right. And a lot of bands that I work with, I like to go to at least one practice and just kind of go over the music, make any suggestions that I think would make it a little more polished record, a little bit more produced sounding.
Right.
And that starts with the music. And then when they come in the studio, we start with the drums. We get all the drums done. Then we layer on guitars and then bass and then vocals. And if there's any like auxiliary stuff we can add, any like keyboards or synthesizers, or sometimes we've recorded a sax player over like for a sax solo over this rock band.
But sometimes that can add just that little extra sizzle. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, you come up with that, so you will enhance their music, but you have to be very careful, I bet.
In the mixing?
Dealing with an artist.
Yeah, so I never want to take over a project.
Right,
I understand. I always like to say, I want to bring out the best in your music. I want to bring out the best in you. My work is not about me. It's just not. So if I can bring out the best in them, get their music to a better standard, then they're going to go farther with it, and then more people will work with me.
I'm interested in your business.
Yeah.
Do you then get a royalty, or do you get like, or do you charge them? You're not going to the details, but I'm just curious. You get these record producers, and sometimes they make more than the artists.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, that was back in the day. I don't know. Today is probably different, but
I don't think I have any artists on my roster that are big enough where I would have any writing credits. I don't really write music for them either. So,
but you mix the music for them.
I do. Yeah. So people pay me
pretty important.
Right. I prefer doing like a flat rate per
all
song.
Right. That's what I was asking.
And so people just pay to get the record produced. I like to do the flat rate. Some people like doing hourly. So I work with the artist on what's going to work best for them in their project.
The reason I ask you is, one is I'm nosy, but secondly, I have a kid in Nashville. We go there. We've taken the tours, and you go past these beautiful homes, and it's not so much the artist as the people behind the artist that have made some bank.
The thing is, down in Nashville, and in a lot of places actually, there are people that write the songs, and then the people that produce the songs, and then the actual artist who just sings over the stuff.
Right.
And that's not what I do. I like to record real bands. If people want to come to me with a song and they want me to play the music to it and actually like give me artist credits or whatever, sure, I can make that happen.
But your niche is
recording bands that have their own music.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So Mile of Music must be one of your favorite gigs.
Isn't
that all original music down there?
It is, yes. but I just moved into the studio in Appleton. Like I said, it was in my house for a long time, and I didn't really do much advertising because I didn't want a bunch of random people in my house. I think my wife would have made me sleep in the garage.
Yeah.
But I just moved into this building in Appleton, so I'm hoping next year that Mile of Music can go pretty well.
Right.
So do you go up, like, to local pubs or whatever to hear bands and things like that?
I used to a lot more often. I used to gig around. I'm in a couple bands, so I used to gig around a lot. Surprisingly, when you do something for 40 to 60 hours a week, you don't want to do it at night, too. Okay. So it kind of depends on the week. Depends on the artist. But
what about, we talk about talent levels, and I don't think Green Bay years ago was considered a hub, or Appleton, or the, you know, of local music, but it really is now, because we bring in, and like Dennis Peters from the Glam Band, you know, he helps us host a thing here on Fridays, and they bring in some people, and it's, I mean, when they're sitting right here, I mean, there's a difference between going someplace and you're sitting back there in a bar store and they're up on
some. It's noisy. Yeah.
But
yeah.
When they're right next to you, you realize the pure talent that some of these people bring in to our studio, but then they all say the same thing, how to get from having that talent to the next couple of steps, and you're one of those people in between for them, aren't you?
I definitely like to be, yeah. It's really cool to see that raw talent and get it to come out of the speakers in a way that is marketable.
Yeah.
And that's what they're looking for, because I think we had, I just want to say, we've had a lot of talent in here, but they all have full-time jobs, too.
Yeah.
He's not paying the bills yet.
Whereas I think you could help them, right? Because that's really, that's isn't the that goal. The goal to, right.
That is absolutely the goal. Yeah. If I could help a musician be able to quit their job and do music full time, man, I would just be elated.
So would they.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Hey, David, what was the point where you said, you know, I got to move this out of my house. Things are going well, but I need to have a bricks and mortar. It's got to be, you know, outside my upstairs bedrooms.
Yeah. When did your wife make that decision?
It was earlier this year. The studio was just getting so busy, and I was having like 3 sessions a day, and it was kind of driving us both crazy having people in our house all the time. And
yeah,
I mean, I was keeping my house really clean.
Yeah,
having people in all the time makes you want to clean, right? But it was not a lot of space. I mean, it was a 10x10 bedroom as my control room and a 10x10 bedroom as my live room, where, you know, like the instruments are being recorded.
If that had been Jim's house growing up, that would have been your Santa's workshop.
Yeah. So he doesn't care about that.
There's some great albums, like some the Traveling Wilburys and stuff like that. They recorded, I think, in Tom Petty's house. Like, they were in the kitchen and all that kind of stuff. So some of that recording is in locations like that. You'd never know by listening to these albums, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've made some great records in that little bedroom studio. Some of the stuff I listened to today, and it's like, wow, that was in a carpeted 10x10 bedroom, and the drums sound massive. So a lot of it is definitely credit to drummers just playing really, really well,
yeah,
and musicians just being good musicians. So as long as you have a good musician, you can record anywhere. But the biggest thing was it was too busy to be in my house this year.
Do you have kids?
No, not yet.
Yeah.
But it was too busy to be in the house, and we needed more space to make music.
So do you sometimes see a great musician, a great drummer, a great bass player, and you think, I should put this group together?
I haven't thought that. That's a pretty interesting idea.
An all-star cast?
That's for some all-star money.
No, I'm just
hey, curious, because hey, you see
nice
everything.
Job at breaking up some bands, Jim.
right. Exactly. That's exactly where my mind went. Oh, I wouldn't want to do that.
But it just, you know, I mean, sometimes it takes someone to connect the dots to make some unbelievable anything, business, music.
Can you stick around?
Anyway, I will talk to you a little bit more about that.
David Pedola, this is awesome. Source Track Studios. We'll be right back.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
A new choice, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation, 540 WAUK.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Siegel joins us now to make our popcorn pick of the week. Hey, Mike.
When I was a kid in the 70s, there was no Walmart. There was no right. Sears was everything, from our tools to all our back-to-school clothes, everything else.
Right? Pants, stereos, kitchen appliances. Do you have pantyhose? Yeah, they're right next to power tools on the second floor. It's like you really could get everything there.
Everything.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll go to the John and Gordy Show. As they do every Thursday morning, John and Gordy welcomed on Dr. Tim Slecker, one of the hosts of Busted Pencils. This week, they asked Tim about why teachers are leaving the profession in droves and the multitude of reasons for them doing so.
This portion of the show is being brought to you by noses. Yes, when wanting to stick something in other people's business, more people use their noses than any other part of their face. Noses, available wherever olfactory body parts are sold.
Well, that's good to know.
It is. It is.
You don't want to lose your nose.
No.
Let's talk education.
Let's do it.
Like we do every Thursday morning at this time. Yep. Tim Slecker is with us. And how are you doing today?
Good morning.
Morning, Tim.
You know, it's okay, right? Every day is some kind of a new announcement where you go, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I know. You know, picking his cabinet, Trump's cabinet, is just like, oh, God.
Oh. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm having a tough time getting a second job at Costco.
Tim, I want to ask you something. What about this story about teachers quitting the profession because of the activities of Gen Alpha students, and they can't keep order in the classroom. The kids are they're unruly, or they can't control them. You know, it's all about their phone. They can't get them off the phones. But more and more people are deciding to opt out and just get out of the teaching profession altogether, or not even pursue it. Sam's having second thoughts.
You guys are actively trying to convince me not to. I'm not having second thoughts.
You're not? You seem a little doubtful about it.
I sent that video, link to that, to Tim. And did you watch that at all or find it anywhere near credible?
Well, I missed that. What you're talking about, though, the dissatisfaction of teachers right now currently in the field, you name it, whether it's unruly kids, the telephones, but there has been, and I've been pointing this out, is that there's an exodus of teachers happening, and that when we talk about a teacher shortage, I don't think that that's the right way to go about it. I think we need to talk about the fact that there are more qualified, certified teachers not teaching than there are open positions. So you don't really have a shortage of qualified teachers. You have a dilemma of people who don't want to teach. Mm-hmm. And the question is why? Is it the phones? Is it the students? Is it the parents? Is it the school board? Is it yes, it's all of those. It's every one of those, because as a classroom teacher, this ability to go back into your classroom, and I interviewed about 400 different teachers across the country in 2019 and asked them that simple question, are you going to leave? And if not, would you stay? 90% of them had said some form of, I want to leave. If I could leave, I would. And what would make you stay? And this is a pretty simple answer. Just let me teach.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just let me teach. And realizing that what they're really saying there is that between the parents, between the regulations, between, trying to meet test scores, between everything, it's just like, I can't teach. I got into this profession to make a difference in the world, to actually ignite fires and I can't do that anymore. And you name what reason. And so I don't know, Sam, if you're, kind of getting a feeling like that of, but it is. Sam.
Well, I'm a little disheartened after the election, but I am not discouraged. I don't think I'm still planning to go back to school and get certified to teach. So
good. Good. Well, we need you. And I said, it's, you know, preparing future teachers, which was, you know, what I used to always do, realizing that it is a challenge to go out there and be a teacher, but to realize, though, too, that without incredibly gifted, awesome teachers, there's not going to be a difference there. And so one of the things I used to really work with is to really prepare future teachers for, it's going to be tough out there, but the reality is remember why you made this decision to become a teacher. You wanted to inspire, and, you know, really big ideas or ideals. You wanted to change the world. Well, guess what? You can, but you got to stay in the classroom, and you got to stay connected to those families and those kids to change the world. And you got to learn how to also kind of ignore some of those things. So yeah, Sam, coming in, you know, watching this election and hearing about the Department of Education being gutted, loyalty oaths and stuff like that, a lot of that is designed also too to demoralize people before they even become teachers, or the teachers that are in there. It just drive them out of the profession, because really qualified professional teachers, you don't want them in place if you're about to mount an attack on them. If you can get rid of the best teachers, you get them out of there, then you're kind of weakening the ranks, and then you're ready for a full onslaught. That sounds really evil. I know. I'm sorry. It's early. I've had three cups of coffee.
Totally fair. Luckily, I'm a very stubborn person. Oh, so yeah. they're not gonna get me.
Well, you know, Act 10 kind of did that here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It did get rid of collective bargaining, and we were talking about that yesterday with Mike McCabe. From Substack, he does a great column. And what happened was that they didn't want the teachers' input, you know, the changes in the classroom, what teachers thought was important to put in place in the classroom, what they're, you know, what they're noticing, what they need in that classroom. And collective bargaining got rid of that ability of teachers to actually have some kind of control of what happens in that school.
Yeah, and that's the demoralizing attack, is that when you take away that authority is the wrong word, but it's more of, you know, being in there, being part of the decision making. You know, teachers are leaders. When you take away their ability to make decisions, to make judgments, to use their professional knowledge, which is what you're saying. And so collective bargaining said, teachers, we don't care what you think. We'll tell you what you're going to do. Well, these are people with master's degrees and things like that. And you're saying your job is to sit there, follow the script, shut up and do what you're told. Guess what? A lot of smart people say, you know what? I'm not going to do that anymore. And that's why I said the teacher shortage is actually a manufactured exodus that was, it's working beautifully.
It is.
You have demoralized our teachers to a point where there are more teachers certified not teaching because of the conditions of what it means to be a teacher. So this isn't a shortage. This is an executed routing of qualified professional people out of the profession.
Well, the sad part, you know, because Republicans want to privatize school and have school choice statewide, they want to vilify public school teachers. That's the whole point. And then they have been doing that over the last 10 years. So now we have technology stepping in. We have TikTok. We have distractions on their phones. And kids are getting a little out of hand, unruly. The parents are unaware of it. And they don't want to hear it from the teachers. And they don't believe the teachers. They want control over those teachers. It's all coming to a head at this point.
It is. And boy, I don't think I would do it after I just heard what you said there, Don. My goodness.
I'm sorry.
Thanks
for the pep talk, man.
Wow.
You better get out of the profession, my man.
We're talking to Dr. Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils. We will continue the conversation. You can jump in, 608-879-8255. That's 879-TALK.
Or text us.
Call us or text us on the Civic Media app. Back with more after this.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond, 540 WAUK. CBS News Brief. President Biden is going to let Ukraine use U.S.-supplied long-range missiles to attack targets in Russia. CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland says there could be ramifications.
Some experts have worried that a decision to allow greater use of ATACMS against Russian targets on Russian territory might result in lethal attacks against American and European bases using sabotage or arson.
The president was in Brazil today visiting the Amazon.
It's often said that the Amazon is the lungs of the world. The Amazon is the lungs of the world. But in my view, our forests and national wonders are the heart and soul of the world.
Wait a minute before you bite into those carrots. The CDC says bagged organic whole and baby carrots are linked to an E. coli outbreak that's killed one person and sent 15 people to the hospital. CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Bucks lose in Charlotte. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Bucks lost to the Hornets 115-114 after Giannis was called for a foul on LaMelo Ball. Later, the referees admitted they'd made a bad call after seeing the video postgame. Head coach Doc Rivers.
I thought the final play was the ref blowing a call. Where on the final play, there's been an incorrect call made. LaMelo Ball fell. He just fell down. Nobody was near him. Slipped on his own. We come up with the ball, the game's over.
The Bucks are now 4-9. College football, the Badgers had the lead, but lost to number one ranked Oregon, 16-13. Wisconsin unable to finish against Penn State and USC earlier this season.
We've been in these situations, we've been close, and we've played some great teams, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's the top-rated team in the country or whoever, and you got to find ways to finish and win football games, and you know that seems to be eluding us in the most critical moments.
That's Badgers head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, clearing out, a low around 39. Rain likely for Monday with a high near 56. Monday night, rain, low 50s, southeast winds 15 to 25, gusting over 30 at times. Rain likely for Tuesday, breezy with a high around 61.
It's 51 at our studios.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
I had somebody recently in one of the classes I was teaching saying to me, I don't do politics, Mr. Santel. I don't spend all my time watching MSNBC and reading the opinion columns. I get that.
You might not do politics, but sooner or later, politics is going to do you. Yeah. You got to have some basic level of understanding of what government is about and how it functions and a little bit of the history of it.
You need to do enough.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Managing editor of E-Bombs World, Mr. Peter Rapine.
Google this week released a new product, the new AI overview. If you Google search, can I use gasoline to cook spaghetti? Google says, no, you can't use it to cook spaghetti, but you can use gasoline to make spicy spaghetti dishes.
Not recommended. Do not do that.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will take a look at what happened over the weekend. Don't worry, nothing. Well, yeah, some things are going to happen over the weekend. We'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's burger time on the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll hear a segment from Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Pete, welcome to the show this week. John Schrader, writer and executive producer for Bob's Burgers.
From the 920, Marilyn says, The Jetsons and Johnny Quest. I forgot about Johnny Quest, too. That was kind of a big show for a while. From the 715, Aqua Teen Hunger Force. You know that show? I don't know that one.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah. Keep the suggestions coming, folks. Jetsons, SpongeBob, Ren and Stimpy. Someone said Beavis and Butthead. South Park. How did I not get South Park? We play, like, the Brian Boitano song yes. once a month to close the show. Very excited to welcome my next guest, ladies and gentlemen. He is a very funny guy. We go way back. I have not talked to John in person in a while, but it is great to have him on the show. He is one of the executive producers of the immensely popular Bob's Burgers. A very funny guy, and he is here with us tonight on Nightlight on the stream. John Schrader joins us. Hey, John.
Hello, Pete. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
How do you like my shirt?
Oh, my gosh. Conrad, can you take a screenshot? Where'd you get that, dude? I forget the state I got it in.
I think Kentucky.
I mean, like, you don't live here.
That's the greater humor you're so accustomed to. No, it says drink Wisconsinably. As you might know, I'm a sucker for a pun. I got this on one of my many trips to Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin.
Oh, nice.
I love you. Oh. And thank you for having me on your show.
It is my pleasure, buddy. It's great to see you again. And I'm glad you could be on the stream so I could actually see your shirt. Where do you, when you visit Wisconsin, where do you come to in the dairy state here?
Well, it might be a little bougie, but we will do a family reunion at Lake Geneva from time to time.
Oh, nice.
No one lives there. It's just kind of central to a lot of the family across the country.
Now, do you have family here, John, or does your wife have family here?
Not in Wisconsin proper, but just all over the Midwest, yeah. Some of the Southeast. So it's a nice central meeting spot. We just kind of rotate places. So everyone loves Lake Geneva, of course.
Yeah, it's a fun place. We did a family thing there, too, a few years ago. And our buddy Tom Lennon, I don't know if you know Tom, he lives there now. He was on the show a few weeks ago, and I had no idea he had moved to Wisconsin. How do you like that?
He moved to Lake Geneva full time.
That's what he said, yeah. He has no reason to lie.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
No, he's an honest man. He's a very funny, honest man.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you, John. Well, thank you for representing and for being here. We are on all over the states, so whoever is watching on the stream right now, you can be impressed by John's shirt because it's kind of cool. And I'm impressed that you have it and tickled that you wore it.
Last minute I took off a Dodgers shirt. I'm like, these Brewers fans don't need to see that.
Yeah, the Dodgers, listen, congratulations. That was exciting.
Everybody hates us, I know, but it's a good team with good guys.
Absolutely. And I mean, I took my kids to Dodger games all the time. It was like kind of became my second team after a while. So I always root for the Dodgers.
Right, exactly. That's the thing.
What's that?
Back to Wisconsin. I want to give a shout out to one of our sound engineers and editors, Matt DeVille, recently left the great city of Burbank to move to Cedarburg.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, that's a lovely
town. He's working on the show from there, yeah.
Oh, very nice. So this show has been on forever, John. What an amazing run. Like, I think when I first met you, you were kind of not on your way out from the WB. We were both promo writers. I was just freelance. I think you might have been full-time, but that was like, did you ever imagine you would have this run on this hit sitcom, which is the gig everybody dreams of? You've had like a 12 or 13 year run. Did anything at the WB prepare you for that, or is it just something, were you writing specs?
I was writing specs with our mutual friend Doug Benson.
Yeah.
We would write spec scripts, which is a script on spec. No one was paying us to do it, and then every now and then we'd sell one, but they never got produced, so I felt like I was inching closer to it. And then our other mutual friend, Sarah Silverman, got her show on Comedy Central and wanted to hire Doug and I on that. And Doug politely declined, you know, his passion is performing. So he wanted to stay on the road. He didn't want to get a staff job. And then she was kind enough just to hire me on my own, even though I had written with Doug at the time. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. And then from there, that got canceled. And then I was very fortunate to get hired on Bob's Burgers.
But you had that show was on for a couple years at least, right? The Sarah Silverman show?
You know, it was on three seasons, but there was like, you know, 9 months in between seasons sometimes. So it kind of dragged out. You know, the cable schedule is a little different than the network.
Yeah. Is she, I don't know Sarah well. I've only met her a couple of times. I can't say I know her at all, really. But is she hard to write for?
Only because she's so much smarter and funnier than the rest of us. But no, she was, I mean, it was great. She's very generous and she was a joy to work with. I thought it'll never be that good again working on that, on the Sarah Silverman program. Huh. And then Bob's got as close as you could imagine. It's just such a great group of people. Our cast is the best cast on television. They make it so easy to write. I feel like my job is just to kind of tee them up to go off script and improv. And that's where the gold comes from.
That is so great to have that, you know, in your arsenal too, comedy wise, like good scripts and then people who could take it to another level. I'm going to tell the listeners, because I think every once in a while, somebody does a role on a show that's pretty memorable. And Doug Benson is not a household name, but he's a very funny guy. And he was the guy on Friends. Conrad, you listening? It's very important.
Yeah.
He was the guy on Friends who was it. Remember the Yeti?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah. He was, and Rachel thought the Yeti liked her, but he really said, I got a friend I'm going to introduce you to, and kind of threw her for a loop. And that's Doug Benson. He says, my mom calls it bloomies. That's a very memorable. That's Doug Benson. And Doug and I had acting classes together, and I don't know him really well either, but I loved how honest he was. The guy's not afraid to say anything.
Oh yeah. No, he's fantastic. I thought you guys were tight. Cause that's how I met you, is through Doug Benson. I mean, we were all at the WB.
Yeah.
How did you start working at the WB network?
Pete? Paul Gilmartin, who's been on the show, Roger Rittenhouse. And I really, it was Paul who got me in there, and Paul was kind of my role. My role model. Paul taught me how to think about what we wanted to do for lunch at 9:02 a.m., which you know. So how did you get in there? How long were you there?
I was at the WB network between 96 and 2003.
Oh, wow. That's a good run.
It's a good run. And I thought, well, I'll never have a job that long again.
Yeah.
Then Bob's came along.
And here you go. Okay. So we had Jenny Slate on the show about 4 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago. She's a regular on Bob's. She's great. We've heard clips. We play comedy clips on the show from time to time. We had a very funny skit. She was in from SNL. How is she on the show? Is she as funny? Like she was delightful, John. Like, and I immediately was envious that you get to work with her every day.
Yeah, no, she's the best. She's another one like you who, very sad she left California. You know, she has moved on to greener pastures on the East Coast somewhere. I forget exactly where.
Oh, wow.
So I don't get to see her as much, but she is just absolute joy, as you experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. She was great.
And funnier than anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So when you got the gig at Bob's, you know, did you have any indication, like when you heard about the show, were you like, this is going to be a huge hit? Or was it, let's see how this goes? Did you get in on spec, or did you know the producers? How did you finagle that?
This was the first job I got. There was a dry spell after Sarah Silverman's show ended, and her boyfriend at the time, Jimmy Kimmel, was kind enough to hire me on his show in between seasons of her show.
Oh, nice.
So, but then after both of those, stopped happening for me, I thought, oh, I'm having trouble finding work. I might just be that friend hire. And it was my agent who just submitted me for Bob's, and they hired me based on my work on Sarah's show.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You ever do any voices on the show, John?
No, I don't possess that talent. I'm very happy. I'm very happy behind the camera. I don't even like this stream, to be honest, Pete. I combed what's left of my hair. You did a good job keeping yours, by the way. Look at that.
I never know what to say when people say it. Like, I have a writing partner who's always talking about my hair, and it's just, it's kind of, it's embarrassing.
It was beautiful back in the 90s, and it's beautiful now.
Listen, our traits, other than comedy, don't really get, like, how tall are you, John? You're like 7'12", right? Or something like that?
I'm 6'10", yeah.
6'10". See, I think, tell me if I'm wrong. You've got comedy chops, so I'm not taking anything away from you. But does it help to have a memorable trait like that? Like, being that tall, when you go into a room, are people immediately like, you're so memorable to begin with? Does it help you in any way?
I have to imagine. I mean, no one's ever said that, but
yeah,
you know, I'm known as Tall John. That's because there's so many Johns in the world. You need a few qualifiers. Right. I've been known as Tall John for a while. But yeah.
So, all right. So what was your goal when you moved to LA before you had, where are you from, by the way, John? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Palm Springs, California.
Oh, gorgeous.
I know. It's, it's great. It was very different then growing up than it is now. It wasn't, you know, fun and hip. It was a retirement community. I always joke my family was the middle class. You know, my parents were teachers. So all my friends either owned the resorts or their parents worked at them. But yeah, it was a fun place to grow up. There was a little budding music scene down there that spawned Queens of the Stone Age.
Okay.
You ever heard of them?
I have not heard of them. No. Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah, they're great. But I'll digress on that. So yes, I grew up in Palm Springs, went to college in San Francisco, studied film, realized I didn't really care about directing and F-stops and all that stuff, and kind of gravitated toward writing.
Nice. So
yeah.
Where does the premise of Bob's Burgers come from? I know you weren't one of the creators, but you must work.
Lauren Bouchard created the show. He's from the East Coast, the Boston area. And he's often said that it's kind of inspired by this family that ran a pizza place. And it was going to be a pizza place for a hot second. And then he switched it to burgers because he thought that was just more American, relatable.
Right.
But yeah, it was loosely based on a family run restaurant that he grew up around.
So let me ask you this. So many animated shows, I don't know if it's so many, but Bob's Burgers, The Simpsons, Family Guy. I know Futurama mm-hmm. was on for a long time. We had Mike Rowe was on the show a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you know Mike, but
Mike.
Yeah, he's great. Our kids went to the same grade school. That's how I got to know him. And then we just became friends. Great. But yeah, but how is it not easier, but why do some of these animated shows have such a long run? Other than obviously they're funny. They're hilarious, but are they less expensive to make? Are they easier to make? I've heard animation is very tedious, but what's the secret to a long run?
Well, I think with animation, it is every day is the same. You know, the characters don't age. They wear the same clothes. And it's tough to do that on a regular sitcom as, you know, everybody gets older. The kids get older, especially. But they live, you know, they're eternally, you know, 9, 11, and 13 on our show.
That's a great answer. How did I not think of that? Conrad, well, you're supposed to be looking out for me. Made me look
Conrad.
Silly, made me look foolish in front of my tall friend, John. Is there any end in sight, or are they going to keep the show going? Do you get an indication from year to year?
We get an indication. You know, right now, it looks like, you know, we're about to find out about a pickup, and we're hoping for a multiple season pickup. It's to be determined, but it's looking optimistic.
Nice.
And I'll also say this, you know, during COVID, our producers, I still don't know how they did it. They figured out a way to get all the equipment home to the artists. It's easy to write from home. You know, you just have a laptop. But there's a lot of equipment that I can't even begin to explain that goes into creating an animated show that they somehow were able to get into these artists' homes. And we didn't miss a deadline during COVID, unlike our friends on the live action side.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite animated show? Like, let's say you had to take Bob's out of the equation. What's your favorite animated show?
I can't say that. I mean, I'm a Simpsons fan since day one. You know, I still have a spec script for The Simpsons I wrote in 1989.
Oh, nice.
That I'm not ashamed of. I might send it over to Matt Selman, see what he thinks. but beyond that, I listened to all the shows you said. South Park, of course, is just, I think, the high benchmark. Family Guy, Futurama, King of the Hill. I'm a huge fan of King of the Hill. One that wasn't mentioned was Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And the Brack Show that followed that. But yes, I'm a huge fan of animation. Going way back, even the Ed Grimley Show on Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh my God, I forgot about that one too. John Schrader is my guest. He is one of the executive producers of the highly popular Bob's Burgers. If you have not seen it, you have about 13 episodes to watch, which is very exciting. We'll have John for a few more minutes after a quick break here. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot.
Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's like the red alert. That,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Great. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear a segment from The Maggie Dawn Show. Despite admitting his defeat, Eric Hovde has refused to concede the election that he lost against Tammy Baldwin. Maggie gives her take on the topic just ahead.
Working 9 to 5. If you're willing to do it, I believe you should be able to pay for the basic necessities of life. Call me a raging liberal or whatever you would like, but I think that's the basic social contract. Is it not, my friends? My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, we begin the beginning, my friends. Exactly where we started is where we will end today. And that is, where in the world is Eric Hovde? Well, 15 minutes ago, he just dropped a video refusing to concede. Is anyone surprised here? And making all sorts of absolutely false, completely bogus allegations about elections in Milwaukee. I'm just going to say this. I've played a lot of sports. I've tried cases. I've been in a lot of courtrooms. I've argued hundreds of motions. I've been in political theater, if you will. I've made arguments in committee hearings. I have been talking and competing, if you will, for the greater majority of my life. Basically, as soon as I could walk, I wanted to play a sport. And I will just say this. The whiniest losers on the planet were always the rich kids. Always. Because little Johnny couldn't be told that he was actually no good at t-ball. Eric Hovde is a whiny little rich guy loser. Right? I mean,
how could I possibly lose?
Well, you did. And here's why you did. Tammy Baldwin's a regular person from Wisconsin, and no one here doubts her Wisconsin bona fides. That's why. Because you're a carpetbagger 100 millionaire with a net worth somewhere north of 150 million and south of 500 million. That's a crap load of money. You might act like you care about the price of milk. You don't. That's why. Just my opinion. Anyways, I'm not even going to play the Hovde statement because I do not want to give air to inflammatory nonsense. No, thank you. And I really want to say thanks to every single one of my texters and callers. Y'all, if you have been doing this with me for a while, you know I try to respond to everybody. I try to have a conversation. We have a little fun, few yucks, and maybe some meaningful exchanges. And as a reminder, I'm going to try to do this more frequently on the air. Here are my three rules for callers, because I tend to cut people off. Some hosts don't. And I've gotten some heat for that. But there is a method to my madness. Here are the rules if you are a caller. Do not deflect from the issue. Do not disinform. If I know something to not be true, a hyperbolic exaggeration thus that is of a scale that could be misinterpreted, misunderstood, I will cut you off. And the last thing is, don't discriminate. Don't talk about groups and label them based on group identity. That will not be tolerated, okay? So just it's the three D's of debate on the Maggie Dunn Show. Y'all ready? Write them down. Don't deflect. Don't disinform and do not discriminate. And with that, we're going to take our last caller of the day, my good friend Gary. Gary, it's love to see you. Lovely to see you on the caller list. How you doing? What do you want to say this afternoon?
Maggie, I'm glad you decided to take my call. I could hear you talking to a call screener. Oh, it's Gary. Well, I'm going to take my. Well, maybe you're not, but I'm glad you decided to.
That's
so I was eavesdropping on you. Sorry.
I don't smack talk my callers. Most of that. Okay, no, CJ, I smack nice talk a little bit, but like CJ and I have those tete-a-tetes face to face as well. Gary, my friend, what would you like to say? I'm just glad we had time.
Yeah, I'd like to tell you that, you know, I reflect back on this election and I'm not gloating at all. I'm just going to tell you what I see.
Sure.
And what I see is when somebody is calling my guy, the guy that I'm voting for, the guy that I trust that's going to do a good job as President of the United States, they call him Hitler, a Nazi, and then they go to, and then they everybody goes to New York to Madison Square Garden, and they refer to that as a Nazi party, like in 1938, and all that sort of stuff. That when you call Trump a Nazi, that's calling me, my wife, my kids, and everything a Nazi. And I think that that's why I got so pissed that I went out there and was, you know, canvassing for him way more than I normally would.
Can I just ask you, I just want to hop in and ask you this question. Setting aside the Nazi label, do you agree that Donald Trump frequently says pretty racist and offensive things?
I think that he says stupid stuff, and I know he is taken out of context. A lot of this stuff, like the burning a bloodbath, that was so
fake. Okay, forget bloodbath. I want to talk, calling people animal. We're going to run out of time. Gary, will you call me back tomorrow? Promise me, Gary, you will call me back tomorrow, and we will continue this most fabulous discussion, because I think the name calling is a problem. It is a deep problem, but so is name calling, if you will. You get my drift? Like, you can't call people animals and then be like, don't call me a racist, when you've defined animals on the basis of their race, gender, sexual orientation, preference, or the fact that they have an immigration status that is in question. That does not an animal define. That is racism to me. We will discuss more with Gary tomorrow. I've got to leave it here. There might be a little overtime with Dom Salvia. Not sure. Maybe you'll get a little extra Maggie, Gary. And as ever and always, I appreciate every single one of you, including my conservative friends, or whatever we call it ourselves now, progressives, wrong, right, who knows, left, right, center, the labels don't matter. I'm Maggie Dawn. You have been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, where every day we try to talk about real news and have great conversation. And I'll leave you as we always have. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is better, maybe even best, when we stand together. Tax billionaires more.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming,
a new choice, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation, 540 WAUK.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Madison filmmaker and musician James Runde. And Civic Media host Earl Ingram joins the show to talk about his favorite film noirs. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation.